Was there ever such a time? Then suddenly it's done. The moment passes. Where does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time go? Gone too soon, my friend. And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, February 24th, 2012. How are you doing out there? Hey, that winter snow storm didn't really happen. It's too bad that some of you were either praying for a snow day, although many teachers are on break this week, so that wouldn't have been the case. Or maybe you were just fear and panicked about your commute to your job today, and that shouldn't happen. You know, that's really unfortunate. It was quite obvious by 7 p.m. last night, if you actually looked at any of the national weather maps, you know, outside of Michigan or whatever, that it was going to be icy and maybe a little bit rainy, but it wasn't going to be a major storm. And yet, oh, of course, the sirens went off in Dearborn at 10 o'clock for 5 minutes, and ooh, snow emergency, and the police sent out their Nixle report on text messages. Oh, it's going to be a snow emergency. Well, they did cancel that at 11 a.m. this morning, and it was quite obvious from 7 p.m. last night there was not going to be that. But, you know, you don't want to be the only person in town disagreeing with all the commercial media and all of their special ad sales on their weather reports that are going to scare the hell out of us. And, of course, in any weather, drive safely. Drive carefully. Don't take chances. Obviously, if it's wet or icy or snowy, you don't follow the car in front of you closely, so closely. You slow down because that gives you more time to respond and all of that. So anyway, I'm glad you're listening. I'm glad you're together. Maybe you're listening not on Friday from 1 to 2, but on our podcast from our website, whfr.fm. And the weather is great for you while you're that's fine. Just had to make that usual comment because we do media criticism here. I mean, we talk about the local papers and we talk about commercial media, and try to get the record straight, give a little balance actually to the whole picture. Well, to add balance to the Michigan presidential primary coming up next Tuesday, and it's not just a Republican primary, by the way, and it's not just Republicans that can vote in it, by the way. We'll talk more about that later. I have in the last week, I spent some time on that. But we have a Ron Paul 2012 presidential candidate activist with us, David Dudenhofer. David, welcome to the show. Let me get your mic on there. Say hello for us.
Hello, and thank you for having me on, Jay.
And, of course, Dennis Reimars, my news director here at the station, is here. And
everybody thought I was still shoveling my snow.
No, after that introduction.
That's no, I'm right here, and we have a nice mic check. We do this, David, this is how a lot of times we'll do our mic checks live.
That's not non-commercial radio. If we can't hear you, then we turn the volume up.
Very simple.
Okay. First of all, David, I need to indicate to our listeners about why we're going to be talking to you for maybe as much as 20 minutes, 30 minutes today. Ron Paul, he's not the only candidate. Don't you have to be fair? You just said you want to be fair and balanced, Corning. You know, on our show, our format is alternative views. Remember local news and alternative views? And so the people that don't get their message out but have equal reason and appropriateness to be heard, that's who we talk about. So we don't usually interview or talk to incumbents, although if they happen to come by, we'll give them a few minutes. But certainly we usually talk to the challengers for election. And unfortunately, according to all the polls in Michigan, going towards the Republican side of the primary, presidential primary this Tuesday, Ron Paul, out of the four candidates who say they're remaining in the race, is the polls say he's the least popular with whoever they're asking for that poll. And so, hey, it's perfectly appropriate for a WHFR Journal to talk about Ron Paul, especially the local activist angle and what's happening with the Ron Paul campaign over the next several days. And there's several things we want to give people more information about if they're interested in finding out what the other media don't tell them about this candidate. You have the option to vote for Ron Paul and if you want to this Tuesday. And by golly, if you don't know anything about really his stands on things, here's a chance for the next half hour anyway, and maybe following up from some website we mentioned or some event we mentioned locally to find out more. So, David Dudenhofer, you are an unpaid activist, but you're coordinating the Ron Paul 2012 effort in the Detroit area.
That's correct.
Okay, so you're doing this as a volunteer.
Yep.
Okay, tell us your background a little bit and how you decided at this point, just briefly, and how you decided to volunteer for Ron Paul.
Well, my interest in Dr. Paul goes back many years. I got involved in activism back in the mid-90s. And, through the group, we had discussed different issues. And one of the issues that, sparked my curiosity was the monetary issue. And I had learned about Dr. Paul through that and had been following his work ever since. And in 2007, when he began his race for the 2008 campaign, it just made sense to get involved. And I was quite green and, was learning along the way, as many of us were. But it was a great learning experience and took a lot out of it. And after that 2008 campaign, the grassroots formed the Campaign for Liberty, which is an activist group, and we deal with local issues. Dr. Mm-hmm. Paul always says the best way to handle politics is in your backyard, your local politics. And so that's what we did.
That's our slogan on the show. What matters to you most is right next door.
Absolutely. And so naturally, we were hoping for another chance at this in 2012, and of course, early last year, he announced, and so we got involved, and we had more experience behind us. We had, took the time to learn about the process, how it works, and so that we could be more effective, knowing that we would probably not get the big financial banking of the big banksters, mm-hmm. That we would get more of a bang for our buck by actually doing the groundwork that most campaigns do not do, actually knocking on doors, which is the best way to get a vote. So
there's a lot of super PACs out there, and maybe Ron Paul's getting money from one or the other, and maybe even Campaign for Liberty is a super PAC. I don't know, but
no.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
they're not organized
campaign
that way.
Finance laws, we can't do that.
Yeah. Well, I know they accept donations, but
sure.
But they're not a super PAC. Good. Yeah, okay, but So you talk about the economic issues and the local participation, the local issues being more important, states' rights in a way, as compared to federal government. Have you read any of Ron Paul's books, by the way?
Several of them.
And the Fed, I think, is the last one. Or it's not the last one. He has one about why I'm a libertarian. I think it's like 50 questions answered about...
Liberty defined.
Liberty defined, right. And that's really helpful as a way to start... trying to understand, because he'll specifically take on the question, if he had the time in the debates, he would do too, for like a couple of pages at least, and that's a lot more words than what you can do in 2-minute response on television, on every issue that's come up in these debates, every specific issue, whether it's religion or abortion or whatever. He talks about his positions rather specifically. So I would recommend that if you want to read a book. It's a relatively short book, but it's a good book. I've been amazed over the years, because I try to read widely. I've read things from Democrats about single-payer health care. I think you have to almost, if you really want to be well-informed, you have to read a good book, not just a sort of rant, but a good long book. It gives you a lot of facts and information so you can decide for yourself. And I have to admit, Ron Paul, he knows economic history. He knows American history in detail. And his books, which I think he's written himself, never know for sure about those ghostwriters out there, but these are very good, very informative, extended arguments for why we need serious economic change in this country, that I think an awful lot of people would go for. In fact, there were some, usually rock and roll musicians are not thought to be ever too intelligent, but one of them was like supporting Democrats. You know, he said, and there was actually a quote from him, and it wasn't Steven Tyler, but it wasn't Eminem. But anyway, they said, I read the book. I actually read the book. I couldn't believe it. I totally changed my mind because he read End the Fed. Because of all the factual information there, not just attacks and emotionalism, but actual rational reasons and historic reasons about how we got in this situation we are today, and how some significant changes could maybe straighten it out. So I'm just saying to people, whether you agree with it or not, his books are a great specific source for what he believes and how in-depth his knowledge is on these subjects, too, which I doubt the other candidates. They may have great advisors, of course, but the problem with advisors is you may not know it for yourself all that well. You know, if a push comes to shove, you have to make a snap decision. Where's your advisor? You know, and Ron Paul seems to really understand these economic issues, at least. And of course, you can disagree with his analysis, as anybody can with any analysis. But it's a tremendous argument, many arguments to read and to understand. And so you've done that too. Now you're a younger person than I am, so that means you're extremely young. But let me ask you specifically about, I guess, you know, you've already talked about some of his basic principles you like, but let me go on about why do so many young people seem to be in support of Ron Paul, whether they're Republican young people or not. I've seen national polls where, of all the Republican presidential candidates that have been out there in these TV debates, he gets more youth support. And why do you think that is?
His message is youthful. You have to remember the Constitution and, you know, our way of life as a republic is still a fairly new idea. And so while Dr. Paul is a bit older, his ideas are quite young. And so I think the young people are attracted to it because one of the main reasons, they quite frankly don't like these undeclared wars. They don't want to be sent off to some faraway place fighting a war that they don't understand why they're fighting it, and fighting it for an endless amount of time. These wars go on and on. They're undeclared. They serve no purpose. We don't claim victory. And so that's one of the messages that they appreciate. They also appreciate their freedom. Dr. Paul talks about personal liberty and individual freedom and, allowing you to live your life the way you see fit. For example, what you choose to put into your body or not should be up to you.
He's definitely in favor of personal liberty from the standpoint of having control over your own destiny, of course, but also decisions about medicines, decisions about whether it's health care or life issues. On the abortion issue, kind of tricky for him, of course, as a doctor of gynecology originally, and having delivered many, many babies and very, you know, directly concerned with childbirth and that. He's not personally in favor of abortion, but it's one of those choices. So as a libertarian, that's something a lot of Republicans don't like, who are so lockstep in not giving women any reproductive rights.
Well, I think that his message is consistent with what he is trying to do in becoming president. See, the president, his role is to take care of, you know, federal issues, mm-hmm. and not these local issues. And this is something that should have been taken care of locally with the states. And so that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to take away the federal bureaucracy of these social issues that should be handled at the state level. Mm. And so that's why he takes that position. But, of course, you know, personally as a doctor, I mean, he's had his hands on delivering over 4,000 babies. So, you know, when you have your hands on either saving lives, as he did as a flight surgeon, or, you know, delivering babies and bringing life into the world, you know, you become very personal. It becomes very personal to you when you're, you know, when you're bringing in life and then being asked to take a life. Mm-hmm. So that's why he's consistent that way on a personal level, but he knows as president, you know, he cannot infuse his personal beliefs on others.
Yeah, so. I have to say, and it's I guess a negative factor in that, but when I hear Rick Santorum say things that he's totally against abortion, blah, blah, but as president, he sometimes tosses in when he's really attacked soundly by women's rights groups and others, Democrats. He said, but it's a states' right issue. So he sort of results it. But a lot of people don't trust him in that regard, that, well, can you really have all the states or a majority of states saying absolutely any abortion at any stage of development for any reason is illegal? I mean, I can imagine a few states where that kind of situation would get passed. I know a few states that had that kind of law in the past. There are some things. That's my personal opinion, and of course, all the opinions on the show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. And we're speaking with David Dudenhofer, who's the volunteer coordinator, activist in charge of the Ron Paul 2012 campaign. But to finish my point is, it seems to me there are some things where the federal government has to make a regulation. You can't have some states, you know, where abortion is totally not allowed. I mean, the whole thing, Dr. Paul is in favor of allowing gay marriage, at least as a civil marriage anyway, and I think he believes that should be a right at the federal level, not a state right to decide. But even there, it seems that inconsistency is going to cause more trouble than it's worth. The NRA would say, hey, we would just like a consistent laws from state to state on concealed carry. Because if you happen to be able to legally carry a gun, you've got a license, you had training in one state, and you got to drive across the straight line, all of a sudden there's different rules on that. You might get arrested for doing nothing wrong except you had your gun with you, and they don't respect that right. So there has to be, as United States of America, not as a confederacy, I think there's got to be certain things where the government has to set consistency across the states. Most of our states are big enough, we don't cross the state lines that often, you know, but I don't know if you agree or not with that. But as I said, he, as you said, that personal choice and freedom and liberty is primary in his political theory, and I think I could trust him more to see the value of consistency among the states than Rick Santorum, for example, who is so based in a theology, not a political theory, that I don't know if he can see his way out of it. And I'm not attacking Christianity here, but I'm just saying is that beliefs of faith are usually not subject to logical arguments, and rightly so. I mean, that's why it's a belief of faith, based on faith. Faith is not based on logic completely. You can try to argue it is, but it really isn't. And the exciting part about faith, or even if you talk about the miracle of birth, well, that's something you have to accept on faith. It is amazing how it happens. I mean, in a way, I often, in a rational frame of mind, think, what is this thing, sex? What is this kind of birth thing? That doesn't make much rational sense. Even laying of eggs to have a child, you know, in an animal world. Well, there's got to be a more logical way to do it. I'm not talking about test tubes, but I'm just saying that faith is what it is. It's not based on logic or reason, and that's why it's good, but that's a limitation, too. I don't really want a president making decisions based on their faith, whatever that faith is, consistently based on that faith, because they're going to overlook logical problems and logical rights.
Because it's so subjective. Absolutely.
It is. Yes, it is right. Subjective. Yeah. It can be collectively subjective, you know, for the whole religious group too, but it's still not based on any sort of extended logic or verification. And that's good, but it's also bad, I think, for a politician in America. I think our American system needs a politician who is going to respect all religious belief, including no religious belief or no religious practice, let's say.
Right. You know? The beautiful part about our way of life is that, in this country, we are a republic, which means we follow the rule of law, and that law governs over the government and the people equally. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, your consistency lies in the rule of law, and our rule of law is our Constitution. So we, as states, we formed our state constitutions first. Our state constitutions came first. And from there, the people granted the federal government so many enumerated privileges. I choose to call them privileges because we gave it to them and we can take them away. Now, in those, I believe there's 18, in those 18 enumerated privileges, it spells it out quite directly as to what the government can do. Mm-hmm. Everything else is up to we, the people, in the several states. And mm-hmm. so if you follow that logic all the way through, Dr. Paul's message is quite consistent because he is adhering to exactly that oath. And where I think what you're talking about in the criticism, and correctly so, of people like Senator Santorum is that there is an inconsistency, right. And people are seeing that. And that's why, that's another reason, I believe, why the youth is coming out in droves for Dr. Paul, because they are just longing for that clear and clean message that he provides and consistent.
Yep, that was the word he used to describe himself at the last debate. Was it two nights ago when the question from John King, the MSNBC host, was, describe yourself in just one word. And Newt Gingrich called himself cheerful. Think anybody has ever thought of cheerful in regard to Newt Gingrich, but good for him if he sees himself that way. But Ron Paul,
president.
Ron Paul was asked first, so he had the tough word to come up with, and he said consistent. And it's interesting to me, I just read a commentary from Huffington Post today from Bill Maher, who's as liberal as you can get, progressive as you can get, and totally open and honest and uses four-letter words when he needs to and so on. And of course, he has a talk show on HBO. But his comment on that particular debate extended, too. Take a look at Huffington Post, Bill Maher, M-A-H-E-R. He said, that is absolutely consistent is what Ron Paul is all about. Nobody can criticize him as flip-flopping or having different views. Give him a chance to explain where he stands, and he always is coming from the same direction. Doesn't mean he's open to other ideas or new thoughts necessarily, but he's the candidate you can count on for doing what he says, and he's got good reasons for it. He gives more specifics than other candidates, too. They say, I'm in favor of America with promise. Well, what kind of promise? You know, the audience at that last debate applauded Romney for saying that before he even finished his sentence. Great. But they applauded nothing, actually. No specific any. Everybody wants promise. What kind of promise? Promise to ruin the economy more? I mean, it could be,
well, it's like hope and change.
It's right.
It's two fruitless words that always point to somewhere in the distant future, but never in the now.
Right, exactly. So,
Bill Maher said that, and then he immediately turned around and gave $1 million to Obama.
No, Maher has said at other times though that he is a libertarian.
Yeah.
Now it may just be small L, but he that's his personal philosophy of liberty and so on. And of course, we have to admit Ron Paul did run as a libertarian candidate for president. I think it was 1988 or 1990, which was the election 88. Year 88. Yeah, and then he thought he could do more. Since there's a lot of similarities between libertarians and Republicans, or some Republicans anyway, as well as similarities between libertarians and Democrats. In other words, he can appeal to a wide range. The libertarian beliefs are really transcend liberal conservative, but most people think of it as conservative mostly, but they shouldn't. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of progressive liberals, like Bill Maher, who's definitely progressive liberal, and he finds libertarian philosophy, which is mostly what Ron Paul believes, is his choice, you know.
I'll give you a quote, test your knowledge.
Yep.
At the heart of conservatism lies libertarianism. Who said that?
Oh, Ron Paul.
Ronald Reagan.
Oh, I see.
1976, a Reason magazine interview.
Yeah.
So I think at the heart of modern-day conservatism is the foundation of libertarianism. So the two are interchangeable. You cannot have one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we think of libertarian, we think of the party, but really libertarian just means you love your liberty. So what Democrat or what Republican doesn't love their liberty? And so I think what happens is though there's such a bias in this election in the process in this country that the two major parties have it locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a running third party or any other party, you just don't stand a chance because any money that you get, you've got to spend it just trying to get on the ballots.
Well, and the political debates, so-called, even after the nominees are known, are artificially closed to third parties. Unless there's that, well, in the polls, 15% of the people think they might like the third-party candidate, so we'll let them in. But in effect, who is making the decision on which poll they read? It's the Democrats or Republicans. They just don't want any competition. I mean, if you have another person up there on stage, somebody might vote for them. They might actually discover they want to vote for that party. And so they can't let that happen. And a lot of people think the political debates are all logical, objective. Maybe they're part of the governmental system. They're open to everybody. Absolutely not. So Democrats and Republicans have control of that because they have control of Congress. They won't let a third-party candidate in there. They're not going to take that chance. Many years ago, there was a... was it John Anderson ran as an independent, and then George Wallace before him ran as independent. And, ooh, fear and trembling in both parties going into those elections. They might take a votes away from us, and then we'll lose, even though we deserve to win, but not really because those other people don't like us. And so I certainly hope that this approach for Ron Paul is going to be successful for him. Talk about the campaign, the organization, because a lot of people don't know how extensive the campaign is. In fact, last night I heard Jon Stewart, the Comedy Central, but rationally they were summing up the candidates for Republicans, and they said Ron Paul is the delegate seeker, that's his approach. I mean, he has a plan to actually get the nomination because he has volunteers like yourself, David, and many others in the other states. And you're working on the delegate count, not these cosmetic straw polls.
Right, and that's all they are.
That's all they're reported on. I mean, they report on TV, oh, so-and-so won the state. It was a straw poll, folks. It has nothing to do with the party. It has nothing to do with the majority of people in the state. I mean, nothing. You can't draw any rational connection. It's a so-called unofficial or... non-accurate poll, it's not officially sampled. It's just a straw poll of the people that happened to do it, and that doesn't mean you won the state. So Ron Paul is not doing too badly in delegate count at this point.
Yeah, our estimates have it at Romney 98, Dr. Paul at 82, I believe, is the last count that I looked.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind that none of these delegates have been assigned as of yet.
Right, yes.
Not one delegate. Now, these are just our projections based on what we know because we have a ground game,
mm-hmm.
whereas other candidates are basically going off what the mainstream is projecting. But what the mainstream is not taking into account is the fact that after these glorified beauty contests, these straw polls, our folks are staying behind to take care of party business. Well, party business is electing the delegates to go mm-hmm. to the county conventions and then on to the state and then on to the national. That's where we are excelling. And so our caucus states, we're doing quite well. Here in this state, it's a little different. It is a primary. They're calling it a closed primary. Although we did...
Who's ever calling it that, like the Dearborn Press and Guide story, they are totally wrong.
Right.
This is not a closed primary.
It's only closed from the standpoint that you have to ask for the Republican ballot.
Yeah, you have to ask for, well, you'd even ask for the Democratic ballot if you wanted to, even though it doesn't mean much to vote for Obama or even a write-in candidate on that side. But yes, you yourself have to say, I want the Republican primary ballot or I want the Democratic primary ballot. You don't have any other choices, folks. But it's not closed in the sense of only Republicans who are registered can vote. Michigan has never required registration of Dem, Republican, or Independent. Some states do. There were three major factual errors in that story in the Press and Guide last week Wednesday, and we commented on that here. The Press and Guide has not done a retraction or a correction on that as of yet. And they've had two editions to do that, but they still have one more before the election to actually scare away anybody that would want to vote one way or the other who legally has the chance to vote it's the next best thing to a crime, I think. I mean, it's unconscionable that a newspaper would give out false information that would cause people to think they could not be allowed to vote.
I do not use the word establishment lightly. And when I do, I mean it in the sense of there is an establishment in the government, there is an establishment in the media, and I believe they work in tandem. They're parallel belief systems, and they do not like anyone or any system that poses a threat to rocking their control, be it over the media, television, print, radio, or mm-hmm. over the government as a process.
I've been inside political parties, been activist in political campaigns, local volunteer in the past for a couple of decades. I'm kind of exhausted now, but the simple fact is any possible change of a situation is a threat to the power, whatever they have, of the people that have the power. And they will, according to Machiavellian principles of politics, they will resist it with all their might, even though there may be a good purpose in that change, and something that even fits their own philosophies. So I can't respect that kind of power for political advantage only. You have to be an elected representative for the good of the people who's willing to consider sometimes significant change for the better to make, to get things going in the direction you want. There's a number of bills that just passed in Michigan legislature this week. And I often remember the phrase, and I can't remember where it came from. It seems to me like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. Now, that may needed to have been done, and maybe that was somebody's assigned job. But if the boat is going down, it doesn't make too much difference, does it?
No, it doesn't.
You know, always tweaking this sort of thing or that. And none of it is bad. I think everything I've read in detail, but it's so complicated and so detailed and so specific. But what about these other major issues like individual taxation in Michigan and so on? We've got to have somebody in office who's open to these ideas. And I think even I haven't read this on the air yet, but I keep threatening Dennis with doing it for the last couple of weeks. George Romney has an economic advisor, and among many though, but he's Mankiw, his last name is, and he wrote an editorial a couple of weeks ago in the New York Times that these are the principles that I think taxation should go in America, and these kinds of reforms. And one of them, he's in favor of the fair tax, although Romney has never said he's for the fair tax at this point. And it would be a major change in the way we collect, no more income tax in America, no more withholding, but the significant so-called sales tax is added. But nonetheless, one of the most important of the four principles is the KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. Why do we have all this income tax hassle and all this bureaucracy and 67,000 pages of tax law that I don't think anybody's ever read, except a few corporate lawyers who are always looking for the loopholes for themselves, when it's not good for anybody. I mean, I have to use a computer program that I have to pay $80 for, and it takes me 2 days of my life, and I can barely understand it, and I've got two master's degrees. I'm sweating. I feel guilty, and I'm not guilty of anything. I'm paying my taxes, but it's like, oh, my God, what is this rule and that rule? I mean, to have a simpler tax code that is more equitable for everybody, like the fair tax, and we're going to have a Fair Tax Michigan person probably on the air around tax time. We did last year, too, to try to explain the proposal just for Michigan, even that way. But it's you got to keep your mind open, and you have to be ready for some major changes. And yes, it might disturb the power structure of some established body, whether it's Republican Party or Democratic Party or whatever else. But look in the long run. I mean, not just the short term, and see how it'll be good for everybody. Once new directions can get us, we haven't tried a big deal new direction. Even Obamacare, I've criticized that, but not for the usual Republican reasons. It didn't go far enough. It's not simple. It's made things even more complicated. And you may, David, not be personally in favor of single payer health care, but that's the simple, more straightforward cost saving plan that many countries have put in place. Seven countries of which seem to have better health care systems and at lower cost than America. But I'm just saying, keep it simple, stupid, for the good of the democracy. Got to keep it equitable, got to keep it fair. But we've got to clean things out every now and then. And now's the time for, I think, the thinking that, you know, Ron Paul has, but not the other Republicans. They don't seem to see it that way. The criticism, you know, even back and forth between Santorum and Romney and their attack ads in Michigan, which are just terrible, awful. I mean, how could Santorum or Romney even accept a few of those other than the super PAC ones? They don't have to say, I accept this ad. They're just brutal, unfair, emotional in the worst way, fear-mongering. But they both could fall under that category of being part of the establishment and supporting the status quo, no matter what, almost.
You know, David, earlier you were talking about the Michigan portion of the campaign. You have quite a few things ahead of you in the next couple of days. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on?
Absolutely. Dr. Paul will be in town starting tomorrow. He will be at Central Michigan University, and so after I leave here, I'll be traveling up there, and he'll be there tomorrow afternoon. And we expect
the weather. I heard it's really, really bad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead. That won't stop a Ron Paul fan from coming out.
That's right.
Our supporters come through all sorts of weather. But he'll be there. And then Sunday we'll be in Grand Rapids for an event there. I believe just outside of Grand Rapids in Hudsonville.
Okay.
And then we'll be back here Monday. Now, Monday morning is going to be an interesting event. This was something that I really wanted to see being from Detroit. And I presented the idea to the campaign, and they pursued it, and we made this thing happen. So what it is, we are going to be in Detroit, or just outside of Detroit, in Highland Park. And Dr. Paul is going to be speaking at a town hall event, and the title is Solving Detroit's Economic Crisis. So there, he'll be introduced by Reverend Holly, who runs the historic Little Rock Baptist Church there. And it's going to be a town hall that, you know, opens up dialogue between citizens of the inner city and leadership. And I think that's crucial, because all too often candidates sort of gloss over the urban cities. They'll go to Ford Field events or Detroit Economic Club type events, but they won't come into the inner city and speak to the actual people. And matter of fact, last time I checked it up, the last time a presidential candidate or a president visited Highland Park, just for example, was in 1952. It was Harry Truman. He was an outgoing president back then. So I think what this will serve is, it'll serve as a standard bearer for future elections in urban cities and for future elections in general. As a candidate, you cannot just simply bypass the inner city. You have to go to the city and talk to the folks. And so that's what we're hoping for there.
Okay, tell us about we're going to mention the event in Dearborn, a big event this coming Monday in Dearborn that Ron Paul is going to speak at too. But Highland Park, this coming Monday morning, February 27th, give us the time and the exact place.
Yes, it's 11 a.m. It's at 8801 Woodward Avenue. And the actual building is the Lighthouse Cathedral, which is right across the street from the historic Little Rock Baptist Church. It seats about 1,250. There will be secured parking, and we encourage all supporters who wish to see Dr. Paul, or anybody that wishes to see Dr. Paul at these events, to please go online to pre-register to guarantee your seat. That's at www.ronpaul2012.com/MI. And what you do is, right there on the front page, all of the events are right there highlighted in red. You just click on to that event that you choose to go to. And that takes you to the registration page, and it takes less than a minute to. And it's free for everybody.
You print out a voucher, I think, from there, correct?
You could, or they simply have it, and you just give your name, and you're good to go. Yeah.
The Dearborn event is Monday evening, 7 p.m. start. But again, ronpaul2012.com/Michigan, M-I, actually, as you said. And the event is at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Starts at 7. The public is welcome. There's no charge. Doors open at 6:30 for the public. But as I've been keeping up with some of the emails about this event, since if you really want to be guaranteed a space, there's 1,200 seats in the, at least, I know, in the Guido Theater there inside of the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. I have to say the full name always. You need to get that registration through the website if you want to be guaranteed a seat. They're keeping track, and about half of the seats are already taken by those vouchers. And Dennis is right. After you register, they'll send you an email back, and then it's attached as the voucher that you're supposed to print out and take with you in order to get in. Now, maybe they also have a list. I would assume if they're well organized, they have a list at the door of the people. But if they're half filled already, then the public might unfortunately be turned away if all the seats are gone. I mean, I don't know what the fire marshal would say about putting another couple hundred in.
He'd say no.
If they're true Paul supporters, they'll be standing outside waiting.
Yeah, they will.
I tell you,
this happened
in Vancouver. Uh-huh. There was 800 supporters that could not get into an event. And just to show you the class act that Dr. Paul is, and another reason why I like him as a person so much is because after that event, he recognized that there were so many supporters outside. He grabbed a megaphone, went out in the rain, and spoke to the crowd in an impromptu speech.
Good for him. Yep.
So that's.
I wish I was as spry, as active, and as smart as he is at age 76. But that's only 10 years to go. Oh my God! I had to improve horribly to get up to his level, or tremendously.
Yeah. Okay. Not horribly,
well,
please.
That's all the time we have on the Journal, Dave, for this segment. We have some other late-breaking news that Dennis actually knows directly because he's now a part-time reporter for the Dearborn Press and Guide.
Guilty.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And we do stress the part factor there.
But, the part-time, yeah.
But nonetheless, we really thank you very much for, of course, coming on the Journal today. Dave Dudenhofer, Detroit coordinator, activist, volunteer for the Ron Paul 2012 campaign, but especially for being an activist. That's fantastic. No pay, just getting involved. Voting is wonderful, and a lot of people don't even do that. But if you really understand and can support a candidate, the volunteers are absolutely essential. Otherwise, simple voting is not enough because people won't hear the whole story. They won't know. They won't get the reasons why to support someone. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for doing the job there. We're not going to, Dennis is going to escort David, let him find the door here. I'm going to continue without listening to Jim Hightower today because our computer is acting up. And normally in a program, it's not a talk show, but it's making a ton of noise. So I've turned it off right now. And, well, that's where Jim Hightower is. He's on a computer file. So I'm turning to other news here. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, February 24th. I'm Jay Koronick, and we're local news and alternative views, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. About that presidential primary, as long as they call it a segue, just so you know, of course, Tuesday, February 24th from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., you can go to your local polling place if you've already registered, of course. If not, forget about it. Shame on you. But you could go and register anytime because there's a primary again coming up in August and then the big elections in November. Once you register at your location in your city, you're good forever as long as you don't move again. And it doesn't cost anything. So why someone would not want to register to vote, I can't imagine. Don't forget, the Secretary of State's office, when you renew your license, or license plates, maybe both, they give you the option of registering right there, as long as you had to go in and stand in line for 45 minutes. So don't forget to ask about that, too. Okay? But this is not a closed primary. Okay? Democrats, independents could ask for the Republican primary ballot and then vote for the candidate that they wish to, and vice versa. Okay? Republicans or independents can go and ask for the Democratic ballot. I know the Democrats say it won't mean anything. We won't listen to whatever the vote is, but Obama's name is there, and there's a write-in. So if you feel you want to support President Obama in that way, well, it's not nothing. Ultimately, it doesn't mean much, but it's something. And I suspect the major media won't even report what the vote for Obama will be, since the Democratic Party sort of says, we don't even want to know. We don't want. But it'll be out there. Whether or not it'll be reported by city clerk's offices even, I don't know. But somebody will know. I do think that the so-called status quo among Republican Party leaders is that they're They're afraid of significant change that Ron Paul might cause. I don't think it's electability. They say, oh, he's not electable. Yeah. You know how many young people would vote for him? I think more young people, once they heard his argument, would vote for him than Obama. That's my personal opinion. But if they really found out what Ron Paul is all for, and I know there's not many young people around who are registered, but nonetheless, they would, and I think most independents would, whether they're Bill Maher libertarians, very, very radical, progressive left wings people who nonetheless are libertarians, I think you'd get a lot of votes across the board. But nobody's really done a survey on that, you know, and in fact, even when they do, these people, they don't know who Ron Paul is yet. Or any of the other candidates, for that matter. Who's the Green Party candidate going to be? We don't know. Who's the Libertarian Party candidate going to be? We don't know yet. They haven't had their conventions. They haven't made their choices. So we need to find out more about all these people. But it doesn't stop you from voting for the best candidate in whatever party, Democrat or Republican, that you want to if you're a registered voter next Tuesday. Okay, everybody clear? It's not closed. It's not just for Republicans. Anyone can vote there.
Cool.
Let's get another comment.
Make sure they get all their information. I have my money on Roseanne Barr, I think.
For the Green Party, yes.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I've not checked. She must have a Roseanne Barr for Green Party president website.
You know, did you not think it was kind of a joke at first? I mean, because of her background as a comedian, she's very serious.
I know she is from a few press releases I've seen indirectly about her.
Let's try to get her on the show. What do you think?
We have had, I have to say, Dennis, you know, in the big political years in the past, and this is a challenge for you because you're my show producer, so it's up to you here, that once we know who the candidates are for the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, we need to get them on the show, at least by phone.
I agree.
And for the last two other major elections, we've had the Green Party and the Libertarian Party candidate on for an hour each before the November election. And that's our alternative purpose. I mean, who else is going to hear them for an hour solid? Where else can you get that except WHFR.FM, you know? Not that we don't believe a Democrat or Republican necessarily should be president, but you got to know about all your choices, you know, to make a good, informed decision. And that's where we're coming from, okay? And I know that established Democrat and Republican parties hate it when I say that. So I appreciate it. But you're very narrow-minded because you're very power-oriented in a selfish, selfish way.
Well, they want to win. I mean, there's that.
Right.
That's a way to survive is to eliminate the competition.
But,
you know?
But when you focus all your actions on winning and not for passing bills that are good for the country and changing things for the better, if all you care about is maintaining your own situation, one way to maintain your own situation is to do nothing and hope no one notices.
True. We've seen that over the
years. So many politicians will just sort of sit in the background. Maybe they'll move those deck chairs around, but they won't do anything significant, so they can't be criticized by anybody.
As a segue, I don't think the same can be said for the seven members of the Dearborn Heights City Council.
Yes, I wanted to ask you, because now, boy, we have an inside reporter right here, and I don't know, has the pressing guide cleared you for a broadcast?
I don't know.
Okay, the opinions expressed by Dennis are not necessarily those of the pressing guide newspaper. First of all, I was going to ask you about there was a special session of the full city council. Was it Tuesday night?
It was Tuesday, yes.
And
3 hours long. And that was the open session. There was actually a closed session after 10 o'clock. I was there from 7 to 10. After that, these lucky people got to go into a closed contract session, so we didn't hear about that.
Yeah, they legally can do that for negotiation purposes.
Sure, and I was fine with that at that point. I wanted to get home. No, but honestly,
what did they do? You said it was they had to pass a budget reduction.
A budget deficit reduction plan based on, as you know, last December, $5.1 million deficit. The state said for cities in such a position, if there's a deficit, hey, listen, you got to submit a plan to clear this up. So, and I found all this out during the 3 hours I was there Tuesday. The city of Dearborn Heights put together a proposal that included a way to bring the deficit to zero in 5 years and 4 months. Apparently, the state does not accept anything other than a five-year plan. So they, you know, came back to Dearborn Heights and said, listen, you can do all this.
Do
it 4 months faster. And basically, that's what they said. They said, just roll the stuff that's in the last year, roll it in and balance it out.
Yeah.
So they had to, obviously, they can't just do that. They needed to vote on it.
Where did they do that? Right.
Right. Well, and
where did they cut sooner?
And as we talked about on the show, public safety and healthcare are the things that were adjusted the most. The situation at City Council was that three of the members, and I imagine it's a coincidence, the three male members, which were Ken Barron, Tom Barry, and Ned Apigian, were in favor of this newly revised proposal, and the four female council members were against it. Hmm. So we had I wanted to ask you, did it fail 4-3 or did it fail 3-4? Because in sports, you put the higher score first all the time. But I don't know how it works in city
council. Are you saying it failed?
Initially it did, yes.
Oh, initially, okay.
Yes,
yeah.
And they put it back on the table later.
This proposal basically was probably put on the table by the mayor, Mayor Dan Pletko.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
And so it was put on the table by the mayor, and the council voted against it initially. And there was a gentleman, and also there weren't a lot of community members. I was the only press that I know of, and there were a couple people from the community that were there out of interest. But there was a gentleman named Vince Macrae. Vince, I hope I'm pronouncing your name, M-A-C-R-A-I, Macrae. And he's the city comptroller. And he said, basically, look, I'm not saying that this piece of paper, this proposal doesn't mean anything. He said, but it's adjustable. The state understands that 5 years down the road, you may not necessarily be able to project that far. So they've got the point across to council that this is a plan, and it is, but it's fluid. In other words, there aren't going to be adjustments made. Each year you'll revise it. And that was enough to sway Lisa Hicks Clayton, who then changed her vote to approve it. So it succeeded. It did pass. And it had to, because today was the deadline.
So if by some miracle the city got windfall profits from, I don't know, a new business moving in, you know, more taxes or something, they could maybe restore some of the cuts.
That's an excellent example, one that hasn't been brought up. Because other people are saying, what if we find a new place to save?
Answer this for me, though, sure. Dennis, in that same line. Can a municipality buy lottery tickets? Okay, that was a joke, folks. But you don't want to run your government that way.
No, but you know, it's funny because some of the stories we've heard around the country, it seems that some of the municipalities.
I mean, legally, they can't do a lottery themselves, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they can with a license. But I never think you should run government by gambling funds. And unfortunately, most states do have lotteries.
Yeah, but it is a lot of money because, I mean, they're generating money because it's still gambling. You know, you're gambling.
Yeah.
The point is, though, that the effort did pass, and it's important that it did because they had 30 days, which ended today.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. There's Dennis's city council experience, and I'll be back again on Wednesday. For anybody that is interested, Dearborn Heights City Council, because of the Michigan primary, will not meet at its regularly scheduled time on Tuesday, but it will be Wednesday, the 29th at 8 o'clock instead.
And they meet at City Hall?
City Hall.
Wherever that is?
It's on, what do you mean, wherever that is?
I've never been there.
Really?
So,
just north of Ford Road, about four blocks west of Telegraph.
Ah.
Okay. It's right across from the library.
Yeah, you can almost see it from Telegraph, whatever that cross street is. So, yeah.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you, Dennis. That's great. Ned Apigian, one of those council members, he does have a show here. He's a member of WHFR, volunteered for years, and he has a show about, in fact, it's similar title, Dearborn Heights News and Views, but it's only on the fifth Tuesday.
Right.
So that's whatever month has a fifth Tuesday. I think it's May now until he's going to be back again with that. But I think significant things like budget questions and so on need to be shared. I just got today, reaching away from the microphone here, something that came up, and I think it's worthy of mentioning. It's on patch.com. It seems that, if you remember, folks, in fact, I was even going to read an editorial from the Dearborn Press and Guide this week if I would have had time. They always publish an opinion from the Michigan-based Mackinac or Mackinac Center for Public Policy, which is a conservative think tank. And it always seems to me it's amazing that all the research they do and that they sponsor, the results always come out in the same conservative direction. Isn't it amazing? They always reinforce and prove exactly what you might expect.
Consistency.
They never have a study that results in showing that unions are good or that health care for all is good. Amazing that, okay. In fact, even this week, the title on the editorial from Michael D. Lefebvre there, he says, research shows right-to-work laws are the right way to go. That means people don't have to join a union. They can't have closed shops. And as I pointed out, the history of that is doesn't work. He even says in the second paragraph of that editorial, well, you know, the research is mixed. Except the editorial says, oh, it's true. He said, but our research clearly shows that right to work is an incentive for business. Yeah, but nationally there's no such proof. There's no such proof. And also, let's not forget short term and long term. Long term, I can quote the history without even having to do too much research, is that it will hurt the unions, which means the individual's freedom is not enhanced by right to work. They are more able to be exploited by the business owners because there isn't a union there anymore. And it's absolutely, positively, that can be proven. And it might take 10 or 20 years for that effect to show up. But the overall result, if you're concerned about individual liberty and freedom from exploitation by people who are richer and more powerful than you, is not there. So right to work sounds good. Their research at the Mackinac Center shows that it's, oh yeah, but it's very short term, their research. And they even admit nationally, the academic studies don't really prove it's good, even for short term. So excuse me, but now the Mackinac Center specifically, or Mackinac Center, however you want to pronounce it. I think the Indians say Mackinac if you're a Native American. And if you're not, it's Mackinac. In any event, it's spelled with N-A-C, you know, folks. But anyway, they're out in Midland, Michigan there in the conservative think tank. They've criticized harshly in their last report published on February 20th, the city of Dearborn. They said that the earnings of some Dearborn City department heads is grossly huge, but the mayor says that their report is grossly inaccurate. Okay, and so it's because of their limited view. He had to point out, if you look at the details, okay, they talked about the total earnings for the year 2011, and I just want to make two quick facts on that on behalf of Mayor O'Reilly. In fact, is that the base pays, which you normally would compare, don't include extra things like longevity payments to employees serving 10 years or longer, mileage. Some people drive a lot during their job, and then they're paid for that. And by the way, the mileage is up there now officially, legally, folks, 53 cents a mile, because that includes the cost of the car and maintenance and gas, of course, and insurance and wear and tear, and all that. So just a few miles, boy, you get a lot of money added to your pay if your job demands. I assume some of the Dearborn building inspectors who have to go around.
Looking, oh, yeah.
You know, they've got to be reimbursed for mileage if they're using their own cars. And I know the city is trying to have fewer and fewer city cars available.
Right.
So they got to do the mileage thing. And then paid time off. There are reasons why you might get paid time off, okay? Can't think of any offhand.
Having a baby.
Nothing bad. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Medical leave. And so it was really only a 3% salary increase, if you look at the base pay. And then he said, look, in 2011, that was the numbers, you have to say, oh, it was a big increase from the past. There was no increases for 2008 and 2009. In fact, 2007 to 2010, there were no increases. So when they did a new contract in 2011, they gave him 3%, but they sort of said, well, 1% a year for 2008, 2009, 2010. And so we'll give you the 3% this year. So in a way, they tried to say, we gave him nothing for 3 years, 4 years, and it was only 3% of the base pay, and that's not out of line with anything. Also, you say, oh, blame O'Reilly or the city council. Nope, Dearborn has a hands-off system, okay? It's done through appointed commissions. And they decide about pay increases, and it's always by contract or their own decision. And so the mayor plays no part. City council pays no part in those pay negotiations. Okay. And by the way, Mayor O'Reilly notes that no pay increases will be applied in 2012. So that's the way it goes. Additionally, all city departments are being asked to make a 10% reduction in personnel costs this year, which the departments would do in the form of pay cuts or pre-tax cuts or pension contributions or other negotiable forms. So, the mayor and the city are putting the screws on expenses. There's no doubt about that. But the Mackinac Center has got to do that glancing blow and make all governments, and elected officials look like they're, doing something that's unfair to the public and raking in the dollars after they got millage increases. So I don't know if they talked about Dearborn Heights or not in that same press release, but it's definitely a problem, definitely an issue. Okay. And so there you go. It's almost 2 o'clock. It's WHFR Dearborn. I got a flashing light here, and Dennis is gone, so I'm going to have to answer the phone call on the air. Excuse me. Hi, this is WHFR. Jay speaking. Hello? Yes. Okay. Dennis is there now. Bye-bye. Yes, that was Joanne, our DJ, coming in. We have, and the college is open today. It's not a big snowstorm in that. But a few of our WHFR staff are not in the office. So Dennis, my co-host, has already left in order to help Joanne get in the front door here today. And she'll be here in a few moments. So it gives me time to sound off some more. New WHFR Journal, local news, alternative views. I know our podcast will cut off in about 2 or 3 minutes. I'm sorry about that if I talk a little bit longer. Other topics from the newspapers here in Dearborn this last week. Dearborn Press and Guide last Sunday. Frog workshops begin March 3. Okay, and that's part, I think it's Sierra Club, but they're trying to do a survey of workshops. And just a minute, let me tell Dennis right here. Joanne just called. She's gonna be at the front in a couple moments. She had trouble getting in, but
I'll wait for her.
Yeah, wait for her. Okay, see how we work these things out, folks, as an all volunteer student staff. Okay, well, we do without volunteers, you know, whether for politics or all these other things that need to be done in society. If the government can't do it, we got to help out, right? And even non-commercial independent media like WHFR. Well, okay. And I'm not making fun of the frogs. Where are the frogs? There used to be a lot of frogs when I grew up in the 1950s, even in inner city Detroit. I lived big time urban Detroit in those days. And we had frogs everywhere. They're gone almost now. And we need to do a survey to figure out what to do and why, because it's a sign that the ecosystem, our ecology, is dying. And unlike a statement by Rick Santorum, he's in favor of people over the environment. Well, I'm sorry, Rick, that's basically flawed, you know. In general, if the environment dies, we die, okay, unless we start eating each other. And I don't think you're in favor of that, right? I think that's against your religion. Anyway, I don't want to be too harsh on him, but so many politicians in these debates, when they only get 2 minutes and they get tired or whatever, they say really stupid things that are not just illogical but just wrong. And so if you want to help with that, the information is there in last Sunday's Press and Guide. Contact Sierra Club locally. They're trying to get a team of people, but you've got to be trained like where to look for frogs and how to count them and what is a frog. Are they counting toads as frogs? I wonder. And for those people, you know, we said that the salaries here in Dearborn are decided for our department heads by a public commission, and that keeps politics out of it. Well, our building plan, our development plan, is also decided by a public commission, and the Dearborn Planning Commission has been delaying or postponing, or is, when they finally get 9 people to vote, last meeting they had last month here in Dearborn, 4 said, yes, we will allow the Goodwill Industries to open a store in West Dearborn.